Keep rubbing there. Oh, keep rubbing it. Oh, no. Oh, hello, everybody. Yes, Santa here. I've been asked by Ewan to tell you about the competition at BritishTechNetwork.com to win a Go Sphero, a ball, or a Sphero thing from Go Sphero. It's great. I have one of these myself. I can fully recommend it. I can't have got one, but there we go. If you'd like to win the Go Sphero, then all you have to do is go to BritishTechNetwork.com and register. That simple. Yes. No precursors, no pre-qualifiers or anything like that. Just anybody can join. So check it out. BritishTechNetwork.com with a Go Sphero. Anyway, that was having a nice dream. I'm going back to sleep. Enjoy the show. Ah, yeah. Well, it's a big show. Yeah, so we're a little bit depleted this week because the British Tech Network appears to be more reliable on Yanks than we thought. So we've got no Yanks this week because, of course, today is Harvest Festival. No, Thanksgiving. So they're all drinking beer, eating turkey and watching shit sport. So... We're going to press on and do a wholly British Tech Network show, which is unheard of. Joining me to discuss the week in tech, what a gruesome, an awesome pair we have. I've just noticed my wine bottles in shot. It's never good, is it? Especially when social services watch. How are you boys doing? It's Alan Hanschel and Wrighty making a welcome return. Start with you, Wrighty. Where the bloody hell have you been, boy?
I've been working hard, mate. I've taken on a new project. So we just opened a brand new medical and cancer research unit in Norwich, which is kind of one of the Europe's leading cancer research places. So I'm over there putting all the infrastructure in and sorting everything out and, you know, make sure everyone's working and everything's up. But it's amazing. It's called the Bob Champion Research and Education Building. And Bob Champion, I think someone said he was a jockey or something. And it's a charity.
Yeah, Bob Champion, he won the national after having cancer.
Yeah, exactly. But his charity has raised the money for this building, and it's absolutely amazing. It's like the top class kind of cancer research place in Europe right now.
Oh,
and
excellent.
All researchers are coming from all over the world to come and kind of do their bit, you know. And it's really rewarding because the work that they kind of do, obviously IT is a really kind of crucial part of that. And it's great to be part of that and setting that up. So there should be some really great stuff coming out of there.
So effectively, if you're going to get cancer, Norwich is the place to get it.
Apparently so, yes.
not for the fact you're going to catch it there or anything, but it's the best place for treatment.
You'll catch a lot of things here, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Moving on.
Yes.
Next to him, Alan Hanschel. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, thanks. Yeah.
Been a long time since I've seen you on Big.
Just getting back into the swing of things from... crazy set of holidays and celebrating the other half's birthday.
Where did you go? Iceland, was it, or something?
Well, Athens and then West Wales and then Iceland within 2.5 weeks of each other.
Oh, right. So you don't actually work for a living then?
I used to. I think I remember doing that, but they're trying to convince me that I definitely am with this week. Yeah.
Back in at the thick end of it all. Well,
yeah, it doesn't look like anyone did any of my work while I was away.
Well, she's off to Hampton's of Penarth for a coffee in the morning.
Of course.
Yes, mate, can I marry you? I tell you what, mate, she came out with a tweet earlier on that I read, and I've got to say, she said she hadn't been drinking when she wrote that, and that I fear for her sanity, I tell you.
No comment.
No comment. She's in the next room. Jesus, man. Snookums, keep that to yourself. The week in tech. Snookums. Oh, mate. So
That will never die, will it?
Based on the fact that you snookums on tours, it's Mullabike.
Oh, I love you, snookums. Anyway.
Right, based on the fact that you've brought two stories, Alan, start us off with your first.
Okay, we'll dig into the strong rumours and speculation, and partly confirmed now, of BT sort of looking to buy either O2 or EE so that they get back a mobile arm.
Well, this was a big three-way thing. I mean, are they buying both?
No. Either or.
Either or, right.
But they seem to be doing quite well in terms of obviously having two potential purchase targets means that they can probably play it a lot more savvy at the negotiating table. Now, especially now it's out in the open that, you know, they're interested in buying one or the other.
Let's just clarify for anyone who's not up to speed here, and correct me if I'm wrong, but am I right in saying that O2 was Cellnet and Cellnet was BT?
Yes. In 2005, BT sold BT Cellnet that became O2 for 17 billion, I believe.
Now, were they actually then at that point really strictly, truly separate, or was it a subsidiary almost?
When they were MMO2, they were a subsidiary, and then they got sold to the Spanish Telefonica in 2005 for that 17 billion.
Yeah. So that's definitely separate then.
So, yeah. So it's definitely been separate, completely separate since 2005.
And you don't want to work for the Spanish?
No.
No, don't say not that. Me. That was my line, not yours.
So, I mean, you know, there's some interesting ones there in terms of people have been speculating. Obviously, there probably are quite a few ex-BT employees that still work for O2 and so would be coming back into the fold. And there's some, it's quite neat in that O2 doesn't sort of do much else other than mobile, and BT just needs the extra for mobile. On the other hand, technology wise and BT's sort of next big push is around, their plans for mobile was to develop a mobile phone that worked off your broadband hub voice over IP when you're at home and then seamlessly switched to sell, you know, normal mobile broadcast when you're out and about, but could also hop on other BT home hubs and open zones to get better signal and use Wi-Fi.
I mean, so go on, Paul.
Well, didn't they try that before? Because do you remember when the first home hubs came out? They had the little phones plugged into them, didn't they?
Yes.
Rabbit.
Yeah. Well, they say those were the early the home hub phones, the hub phones.
That died
they were
really
just
quickly,
voice over
it?
IP. They didn't try and switch between mobile and voice over IP networks.
Because obviously, with the kind of move to obviously, if they move to O2, they would actually dominate all four markets because obviously they'd have landlines, mobile, internet, and TV as well, wouldn't they? Isn't that a bit of a monopoly, really?
Well, see, it is this big one of, everyone's saying the big next push is that people want quad play, want to get their mobile, TV, telephone and broadband all from the same person, one bill, and hopefully, you know, obviously a reasonable price for that combined bill. And so that's where the push is. And obviously BT's sort of been doing things BT bought a reasonable bit of 4G spectrum at the 4G spectrum licenses. Now, that was mainly to look at options for providing broadband over 4G spectrum to places where it doesn't make sense to get wires in rural areas and stuff. But, well, you know.
But sorry.
No, I was Paul. I was just going to say, though, wasn't the sell-off of Cellnet, though, to become O2, wasn't that actually a requirement from Ofcom via worries from monopolies and mergers in the first place? So is purchasing back going to cause an issue?
I think it was mostly that at that time BT were trying to sell off everything that had value because they were trying to turn around the finances. They're right. a lot, okay. you know, their finances are a lot more healthier and a lot of decent growth because, you know, everyone hasn't got rid of their landline because they need their landline for their broadband and everyone wants more and faster broadband. So it was mostly financial. People did think at the time it was a bit of a weird one in that, you know, mobile was only going to get more important. Why did BT sell off a mobile arm it already owned?
Mm.
But, you know, I mean, if we sold it, you know, if they sold it for 17 and they can buy it back for 10, maybe it wasn't so stupid.
No.
But, yeah, I mean, who knows how it will turn out. But it's interesting. They've been deeply partnered with EE technology-wise for the last sort of year and a half, 2 years. And actually, BT's just sort of all of BT's business phones have just been swapped over and are now running on EE.
Oh, right.
So, it's an interesting one of, and I know a week before this story broke, there happened to be a story saying that EE is 50-50 owned by German Telecom and French Telecom, so Orange France and T-Mobile Germany. And they were saying that actually they kind of would like to sell EE off because the UK mobile market is actually really competitive and doesn't have as good margins as other markets in Europe. And I get the impression, you know, it must be a bit uneasy alliance between Germany and France half owning a thing. Whereas if they didn't half own EE, maybe they could compete directly against each other in France and Germany. And that might actually be more profitable than sharing half of the, you know, part of the UK market.
I think it never ceases to amaze me how Germany and French still hate each other.
Why?
Well, no. I mean, the thing is, there isn't a single person alive under the age of 70, 80 more, who remembers the Second World War and remembers that they were occupied, but the French still hate the Germans.
We the French, or you?
Well,
and the French.
We don't.
But because didn't BT work with EE on the initial rollout of the 4G anyway? Didn't they? Because they did the trials in Cornwall to start with, didn't they? So the initial 4G rollout was with EE and BT. So yeah, wouldn't they be better bedfellows?
BT's were built currently working with most of the mobile providers because BT's providing the backhaul for all the broadband capacity from the masts back into the core networks anyway. So BT's pretty bedded in with a number of mobile ones, but I would say, you know, yeah, O2 historically and EE more recently.
But don't a lot of the kind of third party kind of things like GIFGAF and Tesco Mobile, I think they all piggyback off O2, don't they?
So
obviously by buying O2, you're actually buying into a much bigger market, aren't you?
I think Three Network as well, which is huge, and I'm on piggyback.
I
mean, to be fair, that bit's kind of probably nice and easy for BT to understand because obviously most broadband providers in the UK piggyback on BT's lines, you know, so when you get Sky Broadband, when you get all these others, you know, actually all of the bit from your house to the telephone exchange at least and often back to a more central hub is all BT. And that's all this one of, you know, Openreach is this kind of slightly separated, is this separated self-contained company that's got to deal with BT and all of these third-party providers equally. So they're not allowed to show favoritism to BT. It does make working a bit odd sometimes. I don't know whether they'd do a similar thing, you know, whether I agree, probably the competition, I'm sure someone like Vodafone or whoever doesn't get bought will raise their hands and go, monopoly or competition commission, please.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, my worry is, because EE is T-Mobile and Orange, isn't it?
Yes.
So they've obviously joined up, and obviously BT and O2 joining up. You see the worry of moving to the kind of American kind of model where there's not a lot of competition. Because if this went through as BT, do you see someone like Sky or Virgin looking at the other mobile providers and going, actually, we'll acquire one ourselves. And then actually that blows the competition out of the water, doesn't it? Because if that's approved, and a lot of people are saying that it could or could not be approved, obviously for the monopolies kind of thing, but Virgin and Sky must be looking at this and going, you know, EE or 3 or something like that, maybe we'll acquire them to actually put in our portfolio, because we want the four things as well. It does kind of shed a shadow on what could be good competition, which is what we kind of say in this country we're kind of good at with internet and broadband and mobile phone networks, but it looks like it's getting fewer and far between.
I guess the difference will be, you know, if there is or isn't any provisions for sort of equivalent of access, and, you know, like with the broadband where, you know, they have to allow others to run, you know, their own networks on top of the masts and stuff. I mean, 4G, obviously, it's been, and every time they upgrade the towers, it's a hell of an investment. They're all trying to actually share towers now. Even the competing mobile providers have started sharing towers now, because at the end of the day, it just doesn't make sense to, A, fight all of the council permissions to get the towers, new towers up, and B, put up twice the amount of, you know, hardware, when you could just, you know, play nice and save money.
I think the other thing that's interesting about this story is certainly the way it's being carried on PC Pro's angle on the story is that O2 and EE have offered themselves
exactly
a purchase. And that's quite an interesting, not twist, but, you know, bias on the story of the fact that you've got companies, cell providers have always been, presumably, and in the past have always been the golden ticket, haven't they, as far as shareholders are concerned. You know, if you're in mobile telecoms, it's a license to print money, your divvy's a guarantee, actually. But, I mean, I spoke a couple of years ago, Eric Lanning was on the big show, and he was going on about AT&T, and I said, whoa, hang on a second, you know, they're not that big a good business. And they said, no, they're, you know, they're a license to print money. Well, yeah, but they're carrying $79 billion worth of debt. And they've got that long-term debt with the telecoms providers is what devalues them for purchases. And the fact that these two are offering themselves up is clearly saying to me, actually, what are you buying if you buy this thing? Because are you buying just an ongoing free, investment-free or debt-free business? Or are you buying something that's got more debt associated with it than its current value exists? Because that's certainly the case with AT&T. It was the case with AT&T. At the time, they were turning over $85 billion per year, but they were carrying $79 billion of long-term debt.
So they're just buying themselves out of a hole, aren't they?
Well, if they're offering themselves for sale, you know, there's a certain thing of beware the person who arrives bearing gifts and smiles.
But then, like I say, that just gives BT that extra arm to just collar every single market, doesn't it?
Well, you've got a £17 billion business, which 15 years down the line is worth $10
billion. Yeah, but the BT are like are looking at dominating now, because they're doing that with the sport as well. You know, the fact that they were so ruthless with the money they bid on sport as well, I think they are looking at actual dominance now. They're saying, actually, we can actually pull this off now. Because they were really cocky with the football kind of thing, weren't they, and the sports. And they actually, you know, took a lot away from Sky. And I think they're actually looking at this and going, we could probably do what Sky's been doing for years. And I think they're actually going to, they could succeed, because, you know, they offer the sport as a free thing. They could look at the mobile market. You know, you could, because what I was reading, that some people say, some people just want everything on one bill. So if I've got my landline, my mobile, the internet, and my sport and my TV on one bill, a lot of people prefer that as a model, opposed to paying it to four different companies. And they may be looking at that as a model, going, actually, we'll do you a severe discount if you take everything off us. Because I get a letter every month from BT going, oh, take our TV. I don't want your TV. You know, and I can imagine I'm going to get a call, take our mobile. And I just think they want you to have everything from them. And that's what they're looking at. And I think whoever they get it from, obviously O2's got a market there, you know, how it affects things like GIFGAF and Tesco Mobile, I don't know, but I think BT just want that absolute dominance of the market now. And I think they're being quite bullish about how they are going to go about it.
I think there's a problem with the telecoms business in overall. You're saying about everybody wants one bill, but I would love Three Network to give me one bill, but I cannot get them to give me one bill. They will not do it, no matter what. One phone number equals one bill, and they will not deviate from that whatsoever. I mean, I pay for my phone, my wife's phone, Ellis's phone. I've got two data SIM cards that go in my 3G MiFi. I've got a data SIM card that goes in my iPad Air. I've got my own phone. I've got my mother and father's phone. So I've got seven accounts with Three Network.
No, mate, I'm exactly the same.
I pay for all of them. I would really love one frigging bill that just covers everything. And I've gone to them and said, can I have one bill? No. And every time I go in and say, look, I want a data card, because now the other thing is I've got my my old Nokia 1020 and it still takes better pictures out on site when I'm working. So I'm going to take that out with me and I need to tweet those out or email them instantly to the customer. So I'm going to get another card for that with a new phone number. So that's eight accounts. And I'll go in there and they'll say, no, you're going to bring us proof of a bill.
Yeah.
But I've got seven existing accounts with you morons. Here's my driver's license. I can prove who I am with photo ID, and you still want me to bring a utility bill? Are you stupid?
I've got three accounts with three different my three logins, and they're all under my name, but they will not amalgamate it into one thing. I like three, but it is a pain in the ass.
Batwitch in the chat room is offering that I can pick up her phone bill as well as.
And mine. It's all yours, mate.
I would love to have my phone and mobile on the same bill from three, but nope, same problem. That's Batwitch, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I could say, look, you know, if you take up Batwitch's offer, that gets you to, you know, double digits, doesn't it? That's nice.
apparently Muller's wife is on a Virgin.
Oh, well.
So... moving on. A good story, Al. No, I think that's I think that's going to be an interesting one to see play out over the next couple of months. A, whether BT decide that they're going to say yes or no to purchasing, but more perhaps in the fact of whether they're going to purchase at that $10 billion price, and what the background information is to the companies about finances, whether there is long-term debt there associated with O2. And Telefonica, and whether they're kind of jumping ship a little bit on them. And then the monopolies and mergers bit at the final analysis when it all kicks in. The data room on that transfer and takeover is going to be huge. Absolutely enormous.
Oh, God, massive.
Yeah. You'd love to be the solicitor sitting in that data room. That'd be, there's going to be some horror stories come out of that. Righty, what did you bring?
Well, I'd like to be forgotten, please. If that's okay. probably some of the things I've done on this show, but...
based on the last time you were on the big show, mate, you were knackered.
Yeah. That's one of those. Yeah. I'm issuing a takedown right now to you.
You want me to take that episode down, do you?
As my podcast provider, I'd like to take that down right now. Issuing a summons right now to you, Ewan Rankin.
You had the security issues that week, I know, at work, and you were mega busy. But as soon as you went off, Chris Ashley said, I thought he was about to headbutt the microphone anyway.
I probably did.
So what else do you want to be forgotten about?
Well, obviously, Google now, obviously in the EU, we have the right to be forgotten, don't we? We have the right to be forgotten. So if you have a accurate fact that is true about you, but is no longer relevant, you can then submit that to Google. I think we discussed this earlier in this year. You can submit that to Google and have those search results removed from Google. Do we all remember that?
Isn't the requirement about the age of 18, though? They've got to have been occurred under the age of 18. If they're over 18,
The chap who did it, he was a Spaniard who he declared bankruptcy and his house repossessed, and it was the auction for his house being repossessed for bankruptcy. And obviously he got his life on track and all that sort of thing, and he sorted himself out, and he realized after those years later about why he sorted himself out, that wasn't a relevant thing anymore, because you Googled him, you found bankruptcy. And that was when this kind of, I don't know if it's the law or if it's the precedent or whatever, but he had the right for that to be forgotten. And that meant that we can all now fill in a form and go, this fact about me should be forgotten.
Right.
And we can all do that. And I might fill in a few forms after this show. BritishTechNetwork.com/big/category. Anyway.
Yeah. No, so I mean, just cutting to a long story to short, what are you asking to be forgotten here, right?
So the reason is Google were meant to be in court, in the High Court on Tuesday.
Yes, mate.
And the reason why is there's a chap, I won't mention his name because his name's been mentioned a lot, but he wanted his search results removed, and he had 3,600 search results based on his name. And he was actually a victim of a hate campaign. And people were saying
this is not insignificant.
No. So this is why I bring up the right to be forgotten first, because this isn't about the right to be forgotten. He was part of this hate campaign. People were saying he was a paedophile, he was a murderer, he was a Ku Klux Klan member, he was a Nazi sympathiser, and all this sort of thing.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah. And he was innocent of all the accusations. So he went to Google and he said, I'd like all these things to be removed. The Google turned around and said, okay, yeah, you submit all of the links that are relevant to this case and we'll remove them. And he said, well, wait a minute. This is time consuming. It's excessive. It's expensive to do this. And Google would not move. So he took them to the High Court about it. And what he also claimed was, Google kind of proliferated the abuse that he was getting by obviously spidering all the results. He put his name in it, said he was a murderer and all these sort of things. If he provided all the links, they would then remove them. So for someone to go out and then go and look at all these links and then to obviously read all the things that people are saying about him, that's very harmful to the person in the first place. What he claimed was that Google should actually proactively go out and go remove these links. But this, obviously, it was going to go to court on Tuesday, and Tuesday morning, Google settled with him.
Yeah, and I mean, the story says there's a mutually acceptable agreement.
Yes, but is it the fact that Google thought, we're not going to win this, and if we don't win this, does this set a really dangerous precedent about what actually Google actually indexes? Because the right to be forgotten is fair enough. I've heard some really dodgy things about people, some dodgy people who've asked for things to be removed from this right to be forgotten. But this would set a really dangerous precedent if it was passed in law, because obviously he was looking for it being removed in England and Wales, but obviously the EU would get hold of that as well. And that was spread. So are Google actually now really, you know, I think they were kind of like, the right to be forgotten, we're going to deal with it, we'll sort it out, yeah, you fill in this form, we'll remove it. But I think they're actually really scared of how this now impacts their business model.
I think the issue here, I just want to quote from the story that Paul sent through. It's not known how long the case, which will be heard in High Court in London, is expected to last, but lawyers have told the BBC the outcome could have enormous consequences. And I think that's the key part, is the setting of precedent here. Because yeah. In terms of the person that posted the article is clearly guilty of defamation.
Yes.
So if they said this guy's a member of the Ku Klux Klan, which I don't know any open chapters of the Ku Klux Klan in the UK, I have to say, a murderer and a paedophile, if that's clearly defamation, they have to prove those three facts. Otherwise, they're going to be sued and they're going to lose. If he knows who it is, his first action should have been to have taken a defamation case against that person and then involve Google, I would have said. But the clear interesting part here is the setting up of the precedent that Google is assisting the defamation.
Exactly.
And that's why they've settled out of court with something that's mutually acceptable, because of the fact they don't want a precedent that they are an accessory to the defamation, if you like, of Hegel.
Well, yeah, and I mean, also, it's a massive expansion on the right to be forgotten, on the base that right to be forgotten originally was, you know, you had the right to submit this one URL and address, you know, one page on the internet, and Google would hide it from search results. Not you had the right to say your name and these keywords and that needed to be hid across the whole internet.
Mm.
Which is, you know, suddenly going wildcard on Forgotten, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
Very specific.
It is tough as well, though, for Google. I mean, Google is something that scrapes the live internet. And a scrape is, I think, is an excellent word, because it really is nothing more than, it's effectively a potato peeler, isn't it? You know, it scours the internet and scrapes the top returns off the top of the whole thing and then posts those. So to actually suggest that you know, the potato peel the potato peeler is assisting the potato is a ridiculous statement. But then again, if something is out there and it clearly defames me to the point of accusing me of stuff which is really, really nasty shit.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, for that company to continually perpetuate that with a request from me to say, please don't do that, is wrong. But then again, how is it supposed to write an algorithm that then doesn't delete all the references to me and take away stuff that I do want to be there, like my LinkedIn profile, et cetera, et cetera? Yeah. I think that's an incredibly difficult process for Google to work through.
I was going to say that's the problem is, you know, technically it's not hard for them to say, okay, you know, if this and this together, then don't show that result. But you're likely going to then start blocking out large parts of the internet that you didn't want to block out, or someone else, you know, search for two people's names, that there's a first name of one, a surname of the other, and a keyword, and suddenly all of that's gone as well.
But it's the fact that they said to him, you have to submit all of the links. You know, their algorithm would do that. I think that's putting kind of emotional kind of pressure on the chap himself, because he's then got to go and he did it. You know, he went and found the 3,500 links, and he had to look at what people were saying about him, and that can't be easy for, you know, none of us would want to do that. And the fact that they did that, and I think, you know, they are liable in that they have the technology and the finances to do that. But the fact that they were scared enough to settle out of court, because what do we think the ramification would be if he'd won? We could be all taking Google to court, couldn't we?
Well, based on some of the, no, because then people would find out all the shit I've done online, which I shouldn't have done.
I mean, it's a really tricky one, because when the right to be forgotten was first going through, I actually disagree with it. What we needed was not right to be forgotten on the search engine. What you actually needed was stronger powers, so that if something was posted on a website and you could prove it was false, you could ensure easily and quickly that source website got taken down.
Yeah.
Now, I know the issue is obviously that Google is everyone's window onto the internet and stuff, but removing the source would actually be better than removing, you know, than just slamming a door in people's faces. But the information is still out there, and if they use a different search method, then they're still going to find it.
The better solution is to have is for web crawler to be as equally powerful as Google in the internet search market, or AltaVista. Which is never going to happen, and that's the trouble, is that Google is, you know, you Google something, it's right up there with the jacuzzi's statement of the world. You know, I'm going to get in a hot spa. No, I'm getting in a jacuzzi, and it's not even a jacuzzi. It's just a hot spa. It's not made by Roy Jacuzzi at all. But Google are at that kind of stage. And I mean, there's points being made in the chat room here. One point from Batwinch, she's posted the link to the UK chapter of the Ku Klux Klan, which I've got to say, holy shit, those wankers need to get posted off the internet as fast as possible. Right. What a horrific sight that is. Apart from the fact it looks like GeoCities.
AltaVista GeoCities.
It's a bunch of wankers with a completely a moral compass. What's the time on that? 33 minutes 25 for a bleep. That's the great thing about the new version of Wirecast, is I can actually tell you when I've sworn now. But also, I mean, Mullerbike is saying Europe are discussing breaking up Google.
That was going to be my follow-on story.
Google is too powerful, unquote, which The question begs, again, other people have chimed in the chat room. The EU are up themselves, says Windrider, and Muller's qualifying the fact that they have no power to actually do that. If you trade in Europe, the EU have a power to do that. You cannot trade in Europe without the sanction of the EU. So if they've got offices over here, which they definitely have in EU territories, they could be told to close those offices and bugger off if they don't separate their business. But my thought was, when I saw that, how are they going to separate that business? Because search and advertising for search makes a huge amount of money, probably makes 90% of their money, I would have thought. And then they get, egalitarian-wise, all the other departments are given away free of charge. And as with Google Glass, they close it down when they feel like they don't want to do it anymore, which they're going to do probably at some point with Google Plus, and they're going to do with everything else apart from Android. How do you close them down? How do you make them separate?
I mean, the interesting one they were saying is actually, I saw the other day about how many big businesses Google now is in the and in terms of, you know, obviously their major purchases in drones and airplane. They've got major stuff in healthcare now. Obviously, they purchased their way into Nest for home, getting into people's home and home automation. Yeah. They actually have a huge, diverse portfolio, but yeah, it's all built on obviously the core of advertising revenue, which is directly hooked to search.
Yeah, that income is not coming from those businesses themselves. Google Plus pays nothing. Nest, I don't believe, makes enough money to sustain itself. It's subsidized. All of those things are secondary, if you like.
Yeah, it's all about us, isn't it? That's all they want, isn't it? They want us.
Yeah, they want your data, plain and simple. The Ku Klux Klan is a terrorist organisation, says Bronwyn. Probably right, mate. I couldn't agree more. I think they're a bunch of wankers. They need to get lost. No place here, none whatsoever. And EU are in favour of the breakup, although they've got no power to enforce it, says Alan in the chat room, who's on the show as well, funny enough.
Yeah, so it's just obviously a link to the BBC News article talking about all the stuff the EU. I mean, EU's obviously, it's been kind of 4 years the EU's been banging on about Google abuses and competition. So, apparently the vote that went on in the EU Parliament today actually did vote in favour of breaking up Google. But they don't have direct power to enforce it because they're a US company, not an EU company. But I guess it's showing how strong an opinion in Europe and distrust Google now, do no evil and all that. And we'll wait and see. I think it's part of the negotiating tactics. And obviously there's a lot of political stuff going on around this at the moment.
I don't doubt we've said it a number of times on this show. I don't doubt the do no harm, do no evil thing that's Larry and, the other bloke's face, Sergei's kind of catchphrase, if you like. But the problem comes with they are beholden to stockholders, and the problem also comes with at some point they will die, and then what happens? Will Google still exist? Will Google still be as powerful? And when they're disappeared and they're not able to hold the reins, will they still have that degree of restraint? Which I don't know that they will. Mullerbyte wants to know if we can break up the EU. Mate, we've done it four or five times this last century, so I'm sure we could do it again. No problem at all. And they're tweeting out pictures of a horrible jumper on Sizedwell.
I haven't seen this.
It's for fat bastards out there, apparently. Thanks, Batwinch.
Oh, for God's sake.
If there's a hint there, then right. Taken. Yeah, love it.
Cheers, girl.
To bits. I was going to say something sensible then as well, and now that's diverted me.
Were you going to go on to your story, Ewan?
I'll go to my story. My story was an interesting one. I saw this on Engadget, and basically, one of the problems I've got is we got a thing through from the local school that my son goes to, and it said every child is going to get a flu vaccination. And there's a bit of me that's kind of like, well, I know a vaccination is not so bad because a vaccination actually just provides a weakened strain of the virus so that you're immune system fight it off and can get used to it. But there's a certain element of, we believe that our kids should fight off their own infections. So we said, no, we don't want him to have the flu vaccine. And we're working on the principle as well that if the rest of them have got the vaccine, no one's going to catch it, so they won't pass it on to Ellis anyway. So I'm always kind of really tentative about stories whereby the immune system of people is being compromised by things like antibiotics and vaccines. And Ars Technica ran a story this week that said a wireless chip has been shown to cure the Staphylococcus infection. And it's interesting how he does it. Basically, they get this drug-loaded chip, which they then insert into you. There's a chemical reaction within the chip at the affected area, and the chip heats up, and the heat then burns away the Staphylococcus virus in the located area, and then the chip, effectively from its own heat, combusts itself and dies. It dissolves from the heat. So it's not an antibiotic, it's not reducing your immune system, but it's killing the staph virus without that negative effect. And I thought, I don't know enough about medicine to know whether that's a bad thing or a good thing, but he's killing off infections by physical means, via heat, as opposed to chemical means via antibiotics. A pro or a con? I don't know.
I've got Bill and Philip Peatley who may answer that question, but they're not here at the moment. But I may run that by them tomorrow.
As the bloke who does IT for those people.
Yes. Well, I suppose it moves on, doesn't it? You know, I suppose the technology moves on in that sort of band. Some of the things that I see, and obviously I can't divulge, but there are some really crazy things they try. And this may be one of them. You know, I don't know if I'd want them injected into my kid. You know, I don't want to be the first. Go, do you want to be the beta tester for this for your kids? No. That's the issue. The public beta for that is probably, I may abstain.
I should point out that so far they've only done this in rats.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. But
to be fair, that's mean in the, you know, given rats and mice size, you know, this chip's going to be a lot bigger in them than it would be in a human.
Okay. Do you think you don't think they've done mice size chips?
Well, the problem is that's going to be more difficult, isn't it? They probably scaled it a bit, but, you know.
Jim in the chat room says that vaccines are good preventative measures, as are antibiotics, but it's the misuse of antibiotics that's the problem. I mean, I know that there's definite figures that say that since the influence of antibiotics in the last 50 plus years, reactionary diseases are up. So the reactions to gluten, the reactions to nuts and that kind of stuff are increased because of, they believe, antibiotics.
But they're trying. Technology is kind of leading the way in all these sort of things, and I don't know if it's a headline grabber or not. But would you allow your kids to try it? That's the question, isn't it? Because I'm not convinced.
Well, I've got to say, I would hope that they've done a bit more research before they give it to my kid.
Exactly. Yeah. The rats are done. Okay.
Okay.
Norris,
right.
Norris, here we come.
Rats sorted. Ellis, you're next.
Yeah. So what I worry is, you know, the dense population of Norwich, they'll try us first. If they wipe Norfolk out, then no one's going to notice, are they?
Yeah, there's a big debate in the chat room going on about radiation therapy as well. And Muller said he thought that radiation cell was just burning cells at a cellular level. Batwing says it's a bit more complicated. Phil Holloway says, my customers get the flu jab and they still get the flu.
They actually offered us flu jabs at work this month as well. It's like, obviously they don't like us getting off six. So actually they're jabbing us right now. So I think maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's big business that's doing this, because obviously, there's probably some horrendous figure of what sick days, you know, costs companies a year, and maybe these big companies are putting that money into that research.
Yeah.
It may be, you know, yeah. I was going to say your Norwich unions, you know, because I'm Norwich, but, you know, the big companies are probably maybe actually funding this research because people are going off sick and going, actually, we suck a chip in you. You can't phone up and say you've got the flu because we bloody chipped you. Screw off.
So if you've got cancer treatments that affect people on a cellular level, does that make it the cell of the century from Norwich?
Oh, live from Norwich.
For the win.
You win, mate. You win. You absolutely,
for the win.
You freaking win.
That's a show title, Cell of the Century.
Cell of the Century.
On the eve of Black Friday, you got it perfect, you.
I'll write that down before I forget. Live from Norwich, it's the Cell of the Century.
You win.
Cancer treatments beyond belief. I just thought it was an interesting story.
No. Amazing.
Batwin's going hey and smiling and laughing. She has no clue what we're talking about. You've got to go and watch Cell of the Century. There's got to be something on YouTube. Live from Norwich. It's the quiz of the week.
Yeah, we didn't publish that show, did we?
I got disgustingly sick as a kid almost all the time, but I haven't had a cold in years as an adult, says Bronwyn.
You lucky bugger.
Yeah. Now, I've got to say...
Because it's kids that have all the colds, you know? Once you leave them behind and avoid them, you're fine.
Well, now, it's interesting, though, because me and my wife had tandem colds, if you like. You know, I got a cold, she got a cold, she got a cold, I got a cold, and that was it, until we had kids. And once we had kids, Sharon's immune system is just unbelievable.
Oh.
She never gets a cold. She has not had a cold in 11 years since giving birth to Ellis. She's had no flu, no cold, no sniffles, no nothing. She reckons her immune system has got a boost from having had children. I've come down with it. She's never come down with it. Ridiculous.
That's man flu, though. It's worse. You know, it's proven.
Oh, absolutely. It affects us worse because we're biggies, see? These are larger dose, larger quantity of bacteria.
It's got to take a lot to take us down.
Now then, what are you doing next Saturday? Because next Saturday is the Northern Bash. And the thing is, you're all sitting there going, yeah, I'm going to go to the Northern Bash. But you haven't realised it's next Saturday. It is Saturday, the 6th of December. That is a week on Saturday. Plain and simple. If you'd like to come, it's going to be a fantastic day. It's basically a day of having fun, playing quiz stuff. We're going to do the gamer show quiz, cheers against the rest, and everyone else is going to lose and cheers is going to win, so what's the point? We're also going to do a whole day of gaming, so there'll be several consoles there. I'm going to try and take the Binatone up that my parents have got at their house that I had when I was in the 1970s and see if that works. And Muller in the chat room is bringing a coax cable with him to see if we can get it clinked to a TV. We may not have a TV there. It's got a coax input, to be fair. It's a bring your own booze party, so it's not like the bash down here where everything's provided. You're going to have to bring your own schnoz if you want to go up there. And we're going to order out for a curry. Everyone's going to order what they want, and then we're just going to split the fee. It's only a fiver a ticket, and the fiver is just basically to cover the cost of the hall, plain and simple. So we've hired the hall from 3 p.m. to 12 a.m. Tweed Bank Hall in the Scottish Borders. It's dead easy. I have booked a guest house. And it's the Monarine Guest House. So if you go to monarineguesthouse.co.uk, which is monarineguesthouse.co.uk, then it should. There's plenty of rooms left. I know me and Stephen are in there, Muller. So there's definitely two more places available in the car, and there's definitely this place available. Greeny can't make it, unfortunately. He's got a thing on the weekend. But the rest of us are going. Muller's meeting me here at 7 a.m. If you would like to come to the bash and you want to lift up, get yourself to Birmingham, be at my house at 7 a.m. I'll drive us the rest of the way. We'll fill the tank up with fuel and then we'll fill it up when we get back and we'll split the cost and that's the end of it. Nothing else to it. And that guest house, the Monarine Guest House, is only £40 a night and that includes a full breakfast. Which is unbelievable. And then we're going to get to Paul Wheatley's house to sort his video out in the Northern studio because he's he's got a few issues. Can you bring a TV as well? Yes, you can. We've got 7 seats in my car, so we've got enough room to put a TV in the back. That's no problem at all. As long as it's not a 36-inch CRT or something like that. Jesus Christ. ModernRingGuestHouse.co.uk. Muller's put a link in the chat room. It's only 2 miles from the venue, so it's staggerable.
Really?
And do you want to win one of these? It's an Ollie. Yes, if you go to ghostfero.com, you can see what these things are all about. Basically, you run them from your iPhone, and they are absolutely stunning. I mean, this thing's, they're tough to control. I'm getting used to this one, I have to say. But straight out of the box, they don't come up easy. But this thing does 14 miles an hour if you turn the speed up on it. And you put it into stunt mode, and it goes around like it's having an epileptic fit. It's unbelievable. This is the most fun I've had with my clothes on for a lot of years. If you want to win one of these, or you want to win one of these, which is a Sphero, then all you've got to do is go to britishnetwork.com, and on the top left-hand corner, you'll see, do you want to win a Sphero? Click on that and send your email to gosphero.com, and they'll send you an email back saying you have won. And when you've won, get in touch with me and say that you want the Sphero or you want the Ollie. As you can see, this one's in perfect condition, but we've used it as a review unit. We're going to write a review on it. But it's in pristine condition, so no problem. You can have one or the other. It's your choice entirely. But whichever one you'd like, send us the email, and it could be yours, definitely. And the other people to mention, we cannot go without mentioning Telestream. Telestream.net, that's the place to go. They do a fantastic piece of software, ScreenFlow, which is great for image capture. Don does a lot of his stuff using ScreenFlow. And they've supported us immensely. What they've done is give us 2 whole copies of Wirecast Pro. Now, we've always used Wirecast because they gave us it a few years ago. And Wirecast 4 was as far as we got, and thank you very much to them for that. But with Wirecast 6 coming out, they've sent us 2 copies to sponsor or support us as British Tech Network. So please, 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 they've got loads of stuff. They've got Flip for Mac, and they've got a whole load of other things that go on. They've got Switch, which is an audio converter. Go and check them out. They've also got a Black Friday sale on at the moment, which is going to be running through the weekend. And if you use their Black Friday offer code, which you can get from subscribing to their emails, then you can get a huge amount of some of the stuff that they've got. So please, please, please go to telestream.net and support them, because they supported us. They've given us $2,000 worth of free software, which is no mean feat. Thank you very much, no. Telestream. We do appreciate that. They've also got a thing for Wirecast, which goes on your iOS device, which I was going to try and show tonight, but I can't get it to work. I think it's a heavy dose of idiot on my part rather than the software, but I'm stuffed at the moment. And also UK2, where would we be without them? They are absolutely fantastic. Go to uk2.net via our link in britishnetworks.com/sponsors, and please support them, because we'd be lost without them. They're absolutely superb. And they've got every show we've ever produced on a dedicated server. It never falls over for very long, and they are absolutely brilliant. We couldn't do this show. We wouldn't afford to do this show without without them at the network. And also, watch next week, because next week we've got a giveaway with UK2 where you could win some unique sweets. Yeah, you heard me right. These are UK2 stamped sweets. They've got UK2 written all the way through them. And if you're a Patreon subscriber, you've got to be a Patreon subscriber. Go to patreon.com/British Tech Network. Then you could win some of these sweets. We're going to do a basic competition whereby we'll show you a picture. You have to guess how many sweets there are, and the closest 10 entries will get a little bag of sweets. They're unique. You will not get these anywhere else. And if you choose not to eat them, although they are rather tasty, I've had a couple myself, then they may be worth something in a few years. Who knows? But they're over there. There's a few less than there were last week, but they were over there.
Oh, sweets.
But Bryony likes them. I've had to seal them back up again. But we'll show it you next week. Next weekend. But you've got to be a Patreon subscriber. It is the Patreon giveaway. Unique UK2 sweets. Promise you. Now then, chaps. It's time for the cool thing. What have you got for us, Alan?
Can I sneak in two? Because I've realised that my original cool thing we can't buy because we're not Americans. But I'd still like to share it.
Oh, go for it. Go on. There'll be ways. Okay. If you've got one of those, Paul Wheatley uses like a deposit bin thing where you post it. True. And then they gather it all together and
so
send it on.
Apologies in advance to the smutty people in the chat room. It's called the Flaxus. Princess Meg was just choking in the other room. But it's a wearable mobile stylus. You know, it's coming to winter. You know, we've all got those gloves that allegedly have the, touchscreen sensitive material on them, but they don't work that great. Actually, sometimes a stylus would be useful, but the problem is, where do you keep it? Well, this one, they've come up with those, you know, those little flat bands that you could slap around your wrist and they curl around your wrist. So they put a stylus end on, they've made a stylus that can basically turn into and wrap around your wrist when you're not using it. So I thought that was quite a cool and interesting way of getting a stylus without obviously bloating the size of your mobile device or having it hang off on a tether or something silly.
No, definitely. I like that. It's a good idea.
Yeah, and it comes in two sizes for people with larger wrists. So, oh, and as I say, packages shipping from Hong Kong, so we should be able to get it, just not necessarily via that Grand Street website. So, for the ones that aren't in the US or don't want to jump through hoops, I was also going to sing out about Plex TV. Have you come across that then, Ewan?
Will Green has, and he hates it, but he hasn't used it for a long time. But I do believe that it is extremely good now.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and I've heard it's really good with Amazon TV as well.
Yeah,
yeah, because I've been. My house has sort of been a Microsoft Media Center house for, well, years and years and years. Obviously, Microsoft has kind of abandoned Media Center, and whether or not it'll even be included in Windows 10 is up in the air at the moment. So I've started searching around for, well, what am I going to use as a replacement Media Center? The bit that I like about the Plex one is that, yes, they, you know, would like you to sign up for their Plex Pass subscription service, but actually, if you want, you can. Well, the media server is dead easy to install and get up and running. Mm. Does a great job dragging down all of the associated pictures and metadata and stuff, and is all free. Using it as a DNLA client to your TVs or anything else, or, you know, video consoles, that all works free. And then if you want, you can buy their mobile apps to get it on practically any platform. So, you know, Windows, Windows Phone, Apple, Android. And then, you know, they also support Amazon Fire TV, Chromecast, Roku, some Samsung smart TVs, some Vizio TVs, some LG TVs. Also, the server runs on Windows, Apple, and Linux boxes. And they've just recently gone and released clients for Xbox 360 and Xbox One. So the idea was, once those apps come out of beta and I can buy them rather than have to be a PlexPass subscriber to actually get them, you know, early release, then that's probably what I'm going to use, because then I can have all of this rich media. The other nice one is that it does home streaming, but it also, with zero configuration and just universal plug and play, works great. So I can stream all my content anywhere I can get an internet connection as well, and it will auto adapt the bandwidth and things like that. And so far it's been working really great and simple. And at the moment their apps are on a sale until the 29th. All of their apps have now dropped to $1.99, which obviously is pretty cheap. And also, if you buy the Windows or Windows Phone one, it's a universal app. So buy it once and you get it on both Windows and Windows Phone for the same price.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
No, love that pick. Good on you, mate. Superb. Cool. Righty, what have you got for me?
Well, I've got a replacement for your contacts book on iOS, which I found today is absolutely, and I'm not even trying to pronounce it. It's spelled R-I-N-B-W, which I suppose is Rumbo. Rumba? Anyway, Rumba, R-I-N-B-W. Anyway, what it does is it replaces your contacts list with videos of your contacts. So if I do that, you can see a super picture of me as my contact there.
Okay.
And if I was to call my daughter, so I look at my contacts there, I will call my daughter. She's doing some really crazy stuff. But what I can do from here is I can call her on like a messenger. So you can actually replace your contacts list and all the people who is like a little 5-second video. But it just actually livens up your contact list. So but as people actually sign up, you can invite them and they can add their phones and that. But when they update their video, you get the updated video on your phone. So I can say here, I can messenger now. It goes straight into the messenger. If I cancel that, I can then give her a ring. But just a really little fun thing. Is it iOS only at the moment?
Do stop it before you call her. There's a good chap.
Yes, I did that.
Because it's past the bedtime, I'm sure.
Yes, but then you get my lovely little face there as a little thing. But just a little way of live, and it's absolutely free as well. Just a little way of livening up your contact list.
It's a very good GIF.
Yes.
It doesn't, it's not seamless, but it's not bad.
No.
Hers is better than yours.
Well, of course it is. She's bloody 11 years old. Of course it's better than mine. But I will add one more cool thing, if I may. I've been playing a lot of games lately, and I don't know if anyone's missed this, and Alan being a Microsoft kind of guy, has anyone played the game Prototype on the Xbox 360? Because I think a lot of people have passed this. No, it's a 2009 game, and it's what Assassin's Creed should have been. It's like Assassin's Creed, Grand Theft Auto, and I don't know, Call of Duty all rolled into one. And if you missed it 5 years ago, just go into your little second-hand shop, buy a game called Prototype on your Xbox 360. It's the most mental game I've ever played. You can just literally like run at a building and just literally vertically run up it. And you can just like, you can kill anything. You can throw people at helicopters. You can throw anything at helicopters. You can destroy anything in the game. It's just the most insane game I've ever played. And it's Activision, so I'm surprised it wasn't so big. But I picked it up after watching a video online. But just if I got a £4 at CEX. If you want to spend £4 for a really excellent game for a weekend's play, go and find Prototype on the Xbox 360. It's freaking mental.
Okay. Prototype Xbox 360.
And there's Prototype 2 as well. So there's a sequel to it as well. It's the most mental game I've ever played. It's fantastic.
Good one. Nice one, mate. Like that. Great deal. My cool thing is not for everyone, but here you go. This is a three-axis gimbal, okay, for your GoPro camera. Now, if you're thinking about getting a GoPro, you can get the GoPro 3 Plus for £199 now. The reason being that tomorrow, the GoPro 4 will be out. So I've got two GoPro 4s coming tomorrow. But the 3 Plus will fit into this gimbal. This is the Feiyutech. It's F-E-I-Y-U-T-E-C-H. Feiyutech G-Series gimbal. Now you're sitting there, okay, well, what goes on? Well, if all you have to do is sit it still and switch it on, look. And completely silently, there's no whines or anything like that. It will just suddenly decide that it's time to get itself level. There you go. And it goes completely level. And then when you move it around, the camera is always pointing where you wanted it to point. It doesn't change the angle at all, no matter what you do. So at the moment, if I do that movement left and right, it slowly pans and stops sudden panning problems.
Oh.
So it moves across on its own timescale, if you like, to fit.
Oh, blimey.
But then if I hold this button down and put it into constant mode, which is called heading mode, no matter where I point, it will always continue to point where I set the heading for. So it's always pointing at the camera. Okay. It never changes. And the thing is as well, it changes up. So whatever that heading was at the point that you set it, it will always point to that point in space. It will never change. Now, if you've seen the video that I made on holiday with the family in Wales, you'll know that I take the GoPro around with me quite a lot. And all I've done is hold it in my hand and point it around. But with this, what it does is it gives me the ability to take this around. It's not exactly huge. I mean, it's only sort of, 9 inches long, and it doesn't weigh anything. It's got 3 rechargeable batteries at 650 milliamp hours. So they last about 3 or 4 hours of doing this, as long as your camera battery will. And you can get extensions for it, so you can have long poles and things like that that still give you the ability to do it. And it's just, it's going round, on a family day out, take a GoPro with you and put this thing in. It fits in your pocket, in the top pocket, and you can go and shoot stuff. And I gave it to Bryony to run around the house and shoot some footage. And, you know, everyone knows you give a camera to a 5-year-old with video, it's going to be jerky as hell. Yeah. Nothing's going to work. And all I did was set this in her hand, and she carried it around, and it is smooth as silk. She's pretty good.
So for the on your holiday video, you used that?
I only got this week. I didn't have that.
So for the holiday video, that's just the iPhone 5, 6 Plus panning with your hand, was it?
No, the holiday video's got bits of GoPro, bits of other videos from the 6D, and bits of iPhone as well as. But that's there nifty. You go. So it just all sits in. Just holds it level constantly. It's absolutely beautiful. It's £240, so it's not cheap, but it's certainly worth the money. Definitely, if you like to your little family GoPro videos, go out for a day, take a GoPro with you. It's perfect. And the one that's really cool is the setting whereby you set the heading, because once you've set that angle and heading, it never changes. You can angle it wherever you want; it will completely stay in that exact location.
Fantastic.
So it never ever changes. It will always be at the correct angle. It will angle up and it will angle down exactly where it's supposed to be. It's beautiful. Do love it.
Gorgeous.
It's best thing I bought this year, I've got to say. I've only had it a week, but I've taken it out and shot some video with it, and I walked down a country path while I was out shooting the other day, and you wouldn't have guessed that I was walking holding it on a gimbal. It was smooth. You'd have thought I was on a gliding track. It was that good. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Hauschel?
Best place is on Twitter at Digital Amoeba.
The show title is 9 inches long but level all the time. Thanks. The Cell of the Century is going to be the show title, and that's
no, no.
You can't take it away from Norwich.
No, never.
Absolutely. And Righty, where are you, sir?
Hello, mate. You'll find me at Paulhams on Twitter and at my new website, paulhams.uk.
Oh, aye, aye. What are you doing on there?
That's just random crap that I put on the internet.
All right, mate. Still going to be our race review, aren't you?
I'll tell you what, you got some real good stuff coming, mate. Some real good stuff coming.
Good man.
Yeah. Good man. Always BTN, mate. Always BTN.
Good lad. We like that. We'll be back again next week. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. But tomorrow we got the Max Show, and it's a bit depleted because of Thanksgiving. A few people are going to have a hangover. So there's only a few of us, but we'll still have a chit-chat about the all things Mac. And then next week, we'll all be back to normal, and we'll be back. On Monday, watch out for Santa, because Santa's coming back with his crap for Christmas on the news show with Carl Swagger.
Oh, Santa.
Oh, yes. Santa's back.
He didn't answer my letters from last year. You have a word with him.
Well, you didn't say please, mate. You didn't start with a salutation.
Sorry.
Dear Santa, you wanker.
Yeah.
we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.